The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, February 16th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show. Hello, I'm your host, Kelly, and this is K-Voice of Resistance. Yeah, it's happened again. There's been another mass shooting. This one was large enough for us to set up and take notice of, and it was yet another shooting at a high school.
It was the end of the school day, the last period. We were about 15 minutes from dismissal, and the fire alarm went off.
Oh, my God!
17 Julia 5, I have the gunshot victim.
I was in third floor upstairs, and then we just heard gunshots. And then me and my friend ran outside the class. We ran downstairs, and then right after that, I looked back up, and he got shot in the head, so I just ran to a different class.
I went to make a right, and I just ran, and I had my book bag on my back just in case I got shot from the back. It would go through my book bags and my books. I ran to where there were students and teachers, and
it's just different when it hits home, you know? You read about it, you see it when it happens in other places, but when it's your backyard, when it's your child that's hiding, it's just a little different, you know? It's a very sad day.
Please, this is the 18th one this year. That's unacceptable. We're children. You guys, are the adults. People are gonna keep saying, oh, this is just another shooting. It's never gonna happen to me. But what happens is when you don't take action, things like this eventually will happen to you. Children will continue to die if we don't take a stand now.
Just one day after Parkland, Florida High School was shot up by a white supremacist-trained former student, families and students came together at a vigil to mourn the loss of their friends who were gunned down. Thousands of community members gathered for a candlelight vigil to remember the victims of the massacre and make their voices heard in the ongoing gun control debate. I'm going to say this all again, not because any of us have not heard it before, because we all should be saying it day in and day out. This is not normal. Our country is the only developed country in the world with this problem. Americans make up 4.4% of the global population and own 42% of the world's guns. From 1966 to 2012, 31% of the gunmen and mass shootings worldwide were American. This is not normal. America is special. And that it is almost exclusive to the U.S. that people have an inherent right to own guns. Other countries with high levels of gun ownership, like Switzerland, approach gun ownership as an earned privilege, not a right, and more strictly regulate gun licensing, sales, and types of guns available. We hear that the problem is lack of adequate mental health care, racial divisions, frayed bonds of society, or maybe the extent to which violence is embedded in U.S. culture, a la the Wild West. Other countries have the same frequency of mental health problems. They also have racial divisions. They have video games and violent movies as well. We are normal in this. Where we are not normal is our guns. And is this man who shot up the school a white Christian terrorist? Can we call him that? We call any lone gunman who has posted on their Facebook a post with an affinity towards ISIS. We all call them terrorists. According to the Anti-Defamation League, the gunman was associated with the white supremacist group, Republic of Florida, ROF. The alt-right white supremacist group borrows paramilitary concepts from the anti-government extremist militia movement. ROF describes itself as a white civil rights organization fighting for white identitarian politics and seeks to create a white ethno-state in Florida. And the usual chorus has risen.
The Senate will observe a moment of silence for the victims of the Florida school shooting.
And this is how the globalists want to beat the country.
I still don't have the answer. But I know what is not the answer. Just saying thoughts and prayers and then changing nothing. Something has to be done. This is not normal. and we're allowing it to become normal.
Mental illness.
Just think of that today. I'm thinking, what's one law, if not one law that would have stopped it, one law that would have even lessened the chance that it could happen, and there's simply not one.
Mental health.
We change the course of human events around this world, this nation does. We put a man on the moon 50 years ago, and we can't figure out why only our children are running around in their schools killing each other. It doesn't happen everywhere else. It happens here.
What his motives were, but whatever they were evil, and this is a horrible, horrible thing, and our prayers are very much with us for
mental illness.
We're talking about bump stocks. We're talking about legislation. A child of God is dead. Cannot we acknowledge in this country that we cannot accept this? I can't do it, Wolf. I'm sorry. We can't do it.
Yeah.
This is not the time to jump to some conclusion, not knowing the full facts. We've got a lot more information we need to know.
Well, when's the Republican Party going to wake up and realize that it has blood on its hands?
So many families out there, 20% of Americans at some point struggle with mental health issues. This touches almost every single family in the country at some level. And to mischaracterize the folks that are struggling with this in such a way does a huge disservice to the debate and obfuscates what I think our society really needs to do, which is, yes, I'm a huge proponent of increasing our resources for mental illness across this nation, but to try to do something to make sure that we don't have kids that are getting gunned down in schools and concerts and churches enough.
Shep Smith on Fox quote-unquote news can see the insanity of living in a country that allows this to happen over and over and over again. Trump's supporters are using the Florida school shooting to attack the FBI and call for an end to the Russia probe. And Coulter and others are going so far as to blame the shooting on the FBI. But we are the ones politicizing it by calling for reasonable gun control. Republican Ted Cruz on Thursday accused Democrats of politicizing the latest school massacre, only to go on to blame President Barack Obama for the Sutherland Springs shooting. The shooter's own attorney broke down on the news, talking about the 17 people, children, and teachers who are lost. The shooter's own attorney. And yet, Ted Cruz and nor one of these Republican politicians had it in them to be so moved to action. CBS Sports radio host Jim Rome is calling for action, but we won't see any. We hear the cries that mental illness is the problem, even from some more well-meaning people. The right will blame mental illness, but then proceed to gut programs that help the mentally ill. Not to mention the fact the mental illness isn't a major cause of gun murder or mass shootings. Mentally ill people, on the other hand, are far likelier to be the victims of gun violence, especially violence from the police. Not to say that we shouldn't do more for the mentally ill, but we need to stop stigmatizing those who suffer. It feels hopeless. But there is hope. And we need to vote people in who will choose to make the changes that need to be made. They will vote to restrict guns and fight the mass slaughter of people in America at the end of a fetishized toy. At the end of these elaborate and powerful toys that murder children, that murder whole families, that destroy, that carve scars in the minds of the victims, these toys that burn holes in family trees, that slaughter, that maim, that terrorize. And Democrats, too, are culpable for not advancing gun legislation. We have had control of all three branches of the government and done nothing. Some of our more prominent Democrats have been weak or terrible on guns in the past. I'm looking at you, Bernie. We need to look up to politicians who will run on and be fearless with gun control. Who is willing to take action? We need to vote in Democrats who will fulfill the right's worst fears, the promise they make about the left, who will actually restrict and even take away their precious guns. At the very least, the big ones, the automatic ones, the ones designed for no other use than cutting down as many human beings as possible in the shortest amount of time. If I have one small thread of hope, it's this. There have been wins. If not in Washington, then locally. Just last year, Louisiana, Nevada, New Jersey, North Dakota, Tennessee, and Utah all passed new restrictions on firearms for domestic abusers. Of those, only Louisiana had an actual Democratic governor to sign the bill. And the bills got signed. That brings to 23 the number of states that have enhanced the laws around domestic abusers since 2013. Hawaii, Washington State, and Deep Red Tennessee have all passed laws requiring that law enforcement be notified when anyone who fails to pass a background check tries to purchase a gun, while attempts to repeal the background checks in Iowa and Nebraska have both failed. There have also been gun lobby defeats. 17 of 18 states rejected bills to allow guns in schools, and 14 of 16 states rejected bills to allow guns on college campuses, and 20 of 22 states didn't pass bills that would have eliminated requirements for permits to carry guns, a top priority for the National Rifle Association. Instead of feeling hopeless, maybe we need to look locally and see what we can do in our own state, cities, and in our own local politicians. We owe much of these victories I have listed to groups like Every Town for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action, working tirelessly every day on the ground to change this destructive system. The best way to channel our anger, our grief, is through action. So go to everytown.org and donate today. Go there and educate and get involved. Do it, because lives are on the line and the children of this country cannot afford those who care about gun safety to become defeated and hopeless. We've got to step up, because it's only getting worse. See, there are many ways that the gun situation in this country can get worse, and one of those is through funding. Donald's proposed budget would slash funding for background checks, the National Criminal Records History Improvement Program, and the NICS Act Record Improvement Program provide funding to states to improve their reporting of domestic violence and other violent crimes in order to include perpetrators in the National Background Check Database for gun purchases. And Donald wants to slash their funding. 90% of Americans support universal background checks. Let's make sure this doesn't happen.
Resist!
All right, let's change the subject. It seems as though the dream is dead. The Senate had 4 immigration bills, and they all failed to advance. Not that they would have passed or even came up for a vote in the House. But the Senate voted on 4 immigration bills on Thursday afternoon. They needed 60 votes to advance, and each of the 4 bills, from the most conservative to the most liberal, failed. Now senators will return to their home states, having done nothing yet again to solve the DACA crisis, and the dreamers are out in the cold.
Russian boys, damn, you're right.
To be outdone, on Thursday in the House, in a 225-122 vote, most House Republicans and a dozen Democrats passed a bill that makes it harder for disabled persons to sue for discrimination. They gutted the Americans with Disabilities Act. The bill will also weaken incentives for businessmen to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, which mandates equal access to public accommodations. Our government at work, baby! And why? I know why. Business, right? Corporations first. Capitalism run amok. There were many disabled protesters in the House that were arrested as they protested this outrageous and cynical vote. Okay, let's talk about something lighter. How about banning an entire religion from our shores? Yay! But really, we have a win for sanity, and the courts have shown that parts of them, at least, are still in the resistance.
Resist!
A federal appeals court ruled on Thursday that Donald's travel ban targeting people from 6 Muslim-majority countries violates the U.S. Constitution by discriminating on the basis of religion. The Richmond-based 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, on a 9-4 vote, became the second federal appeals court to rule against the Muslim ban, which was put in place by Donald with a presidential proclamation in September. The U.S. Supreme Court, of course, has allowed the ban to go into effect while litigation challenging it continues. The 4th Circuit ruling actually went further than the earlier decision by the San Francisco-based 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which found the ban violated federal immigration law, but did not address the question of whether it violated the Constitution. But this one says it violates the Constitution. And now we wait for the Supreme Court. Our conservative Supreme Court, with activist judge Neil Dolency Gorsuch.
Praise Jesus!
Oh my God.
The U.S. Supreme Court justices are due in April to hear arguments over the ban and issue a ruling by the end of June on the legality of it. Keep your fingers crossed. We need more good news.
Shut up!
And I have resistance news out of the courts. Our fine Republican government has chosen to defund more than $200 million in teen pregnancy prevention programs. Because God is the only birth control we need. And Planned Parenthood, other organizations in Washington State are in the resistance. There are 4 lawsuits in federal courts in Washington State, Maryland, and the District of Columbia seeking to have funding reinstated for programs that the groups say serve 1.2 million young people. The lawsuits center on the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program, which Congress created in 2010 during the administration of Democratic President Barack Obama. I miss him. It provides grants for evidence-based teen pregnancy prevention programs. According to one of the lawsuits, HHS, Health and Human Services, currently funds 84 grants. Since the program's inception, the teen birth rate in the United States has fallen 41% from 2010 to 2016. That is huge! But in July, the department under the Republican administration told recipients of 81 of the 5-year grants that it would be terminating their agreements 2 years early.
You're not helping!
The lawsuits seek injunctions barring the grants from being terminated based on claims the department failed to follow proper administrative procedures and that it violated the U.S. Constitution by endorsing religion. So here's hoping. We don't need more Trump-era babies being born. Planned Parenthood is activated right now. They have declared that enough is enough from these right-wing oppressors. They are going on offense. Planned Parenthood has announced that it is going on the offensive in the ongoing fight to expand reproductive rights across the United States with a new sweeping plan to challenge Donald's administration as well as anti-choice activists and lawmakers by proposing policies to make sexual education more inclusive and increase access to healthcare such as birth control and abortion. The so-called religious freedom agenda, pushed by our president and vice president, which has produced highly contentious policies that critics say give healthcare providers, employers, and others a hashtag license to discriminate, has been met with fierce protest and strengthened alliances between advocates for reproductive healthcare and LGBTQ rights, which could provide useful as Planned Parenthood's new initiative evolves. This week, the group will work to advance policies in Alaska, Arizona, California, Hawaii, Kansas, Maine, Michigan, Missouri, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, Tennessee, West Virginia, and the District of Columbia. Particular attention will be paid to expanding healthcare access for communities of color, immigrants, and LGBTQ individuals, and combating systematic barriers such as poverty, lack of transportation, lack of paid sick leave, lack of childcare, lack of insurance, the risk of detention and deportation, and historical distrust of the medical community.
They have taken on untold millions that they never toiled to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn.
In others, I think I have mentioned on here before about a guy named Randy Bryce.
This is why we're going to win. This is what separates us from the other side. We care about everybody, and they don't.
Randy Bryce is a U.S. Army veteran, cancer survivor, and union iron worker who is running against workout enthusiast and Ayn Rand fanboy, Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan.
Shake and squawk!
Well, Randy Bryce is in the news because he is the first congressional candidate to unionize his campaign team.
What?
The contract was organized by the Campaign Workers Guild, a group of former campaign workers from all walks of life who had for years casually discussed the idea of unionizing but finally got together to make it happen. Think about it. Campaign staff work 80-hour work weeks, and they are underpaid and often awful conditions. And maybe spreading the benefits of unions should start with those who work in politics themselves. Founder of the Campaign Workers Guild says there are other candidates who have reached out and other teams who are interested in unionizing as well. The more organized labor in America, the better the work and the life for everyone.
That the union makes us strong.
And first, I'd just like to say
that...
You may have heard last week in Virginia that a Democratic candidate for the State House in West Virginia's District 7 named Lissa Lucas was outraged that the legislature was considering expanding the rights of gas drillers at the expense of property owners and drove 100 miles to the state capitol to read off a list of fossil fuel donors to the lawmakers in the public hearing. The presiding official, Republican delegate Snowflake John Schott,
next, let's talk about John Schott.
Equated this recitation of public information as a personal attack and promptly expelled her from the chamber. He may have overplayed his hand a bit, because his act paid off for her big time. As of recording this, she has raised over $65,000. Before she got hauled out by the fragile John Schott, she only had $4,000 raised. The amount she raised is even more significant when you consider it is larger than the total funds raised during any cycle in the district in the 21st century. The second highest fundraising was only $23,994, raised by four candidates in 2006. The current amount raised by the incumbent, Republican Jason Hershberger, is not yet publicly available, but he raised just $9,300 in 2016. So come on, Republicans, throw more Democrats out of more spaces. Please. I dare you. The resistance is in action and at work. Medicare for All advocacy groups visited the offices of several Democratic senators on Thursday to deliver a total of 1 million petition signatures of Americans who support a universal health care system. The petitions asked senators who have not yet signed on to Senator Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill, S-1804, to join 16 of their Democratic colleagues, including several who are considered top contenders to challenge Donald in the 2020 presidential election and backing the proposal. The signatures were gathered by progressive groups, including Our Revolution, Public Citizen, National Nurses United, Students for National Health Program, and MoveOn.org. And we have a victory, and a major victory for transparency that could provide a window into the corporate lobbyists driving Donald's administration's policies. The White House on Thursday was forced to settle a lawsuit brought by a group called Public Citizen over its refusal to make visitor logs public. Justifying its denial of Public Citizen's FOIA request, the Secret Service claimed it had transferred the visitor logs to the White House Office of Records Management, which isn't subject to FOIA. Well, isn't that convenient? Under the terms of the settlement, the Secret Service will be required to transfer the visitor logs back to the former White House agencies, which will then have to post the logs online within a month of receiving them. According to Public Citizen, visitor logs from the past year will be released over the next several months. This should get interesting. Alabama. Alabama is one of seven states with these so-called no-promo-homo laws, quote-unquote, which actively restricts schools teaching about homosexuality. The Alabama State Code, which was approved in 1992, dictates that schools providing sex education should teach that homosexuality is not acceptable and a criminal offense.
What?
Homosexuality ceased to be a criminal offense in Alabama in 2003 when the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the anti-gay sodomy laws across all 50 states. God, it was just in 2003. But still, their code says, quote, course materials and instruction that relate to sexual education or sexually transmitted diseases should include an emphasis in a factual manner and from a public health perspective that homosexuality is not a lifestyle acceptable to the general public and that homosexual conduct is a criminal offense under the laws of the state, unquote. Well, there is good news. Lawmakers in the state are, this month, trying to erase the reference to homosexuality from the code. Believe it or not, it is a Republican lawmaker, Senator Tom Whately, that is behind the bipartisan push to tweak the law and remove references to homosexuality. Sadly, the law would maintain provisions that requires that sex ed lessons be abstinence only. idiots. The bill passed the Senate Education Policy Committee and now moves to the full Senate, which is heavily dominated by the Republican Party. So we'll see. 7 states in the U.S. prohibit teachers in publicly funded schools from discussing LGBTQ issues in the classroom. The No Promo Homo laws,
I mean, I can hardly believe they're called that,
are on the statute books in Alabama, Arizona, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas. These can forbid teachers from portraying homosexuality as a positive alternative lifestyle and discussing same-sex relationships, except in the context of instruction concerning sexually transmitted diseases. Which makes a devious kind of sense, doesn't it?
Assholes.
You know, my mother used to say, a long time ago, whenever there would be any really catastrophe that was in the movies or on the air, she would say, always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers, you know, even just on the sidelines.
Listen, people are doing good work all across America. People are fighting against what seems like impossible tides. And on weeks like this, when things just seem hopeless, as Mr. Rogers always said, look to the helpers because they're there. And there are good things happening. There are battles being won every single day. And we can be a part of that. We can be a part of the resistance. And we can fight every single day to make this country, to make this world better. Even if it helps just one person. And there were more stories besides these ones. It's important to talk about things like the shooting. It's important to understand, to grieve, to mourn, to rage. It's important to keep it in the public consciousness. My mom had the idea, and I think it's a great idea, that if each and every one of us on the top of our Facebook page every single day posted this year's mass shootings numbers, or even just schools, how many school shootings there have been this year, and every day posted that, then maybe that would keep it in people's minds. Maybe more and more people will have cause to act and fight and to make change happen. One of the reasons I started this podcast, and one of the things sometimes I forget to do, is to shine a light on where the resistance is, on where people are doing the work, and where things are getting done. Because the news isn't going to report about these little wins, these big wins. And we have to. Otherwise, we as a country will fall into a collective cynicism and despair, and they win. Trump wins. The Republicans win. And they will gain ground faster than we can imagine. Tell the good stories, too.
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Thank you for sticking with me in this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also on citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice and on Facebook, where you'll find all the shows I've discussed here and so much more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, check out the Crab Diving Podcast with Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer. 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
K Voice of Resistance!
And here's Jim Jeffries, because why not?
Now, as I said, I'm all for your Second Amendment rights. I think you should be able to have guns. It's in your constitution. What I am not for is bullshit arguments and lies. There is one argument and one argument alone for having a gun, and this is the argument. Fuck off. I like guns. It's not the best argument, but it's all you've got. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with saying, I like something, don't take it away from me, but don't give me this other bullshit. The main one is, I need it for protection. I need to protect me, I need to protect my family. Really? Is that why they're called assault rifles? Is it? Never heard of these fucking protection rifles you speak of.